Good morning and welcome to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. On Friday, we talk about great success stories in Tucson and Southern Arizona in businesses and nonprofit organizations. We've got a for-profit organization, a wonderful group down in Wilcox area. We're speaking this morning with Mandy Kirkendall, one of the owners of Apple Annie's Orchard. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you for thinking of us and inviting us on here.
Well, great. Well, as I told you earlier, my family has been going to Apple Annie's for years with my boys and now our grandsons. And my wife was a teacher for many years, and she had many elementary school trip down there with her kids. So Mandy, tell us a little bit about you and your family and a little of the history of Apple Annie's.
Sure. So my parents grew up in the Phoenix area, and my dad worked for the Arizona Game and Fish Department. And in the 70s, he got transferred to Wilcox. So they moved out here and got quite a bit of land, built a house, and saw around us out here, there were a lot of commercial apple orchards. So they decided to get into that. And planted the trees in the early 80s. And by the time they started producing in about 1986, the commercial market in Wilcox had crashed for apples. So they had these 30 acres of apple trees and had to do something with them. So they decided to open to the public to let them come out and pick. And they ran a little ad in the paper, and we opened out of our carport, and people started coming down and picking apples. And it grew from there. We added apple cider. We're making our own apple cider. Then we added our pies and our bakery, and it's just grown since then.
Fantastic. So how many people in your family are still involved in the operation? It's you and your husband, but are your folks still active?
Yeah, my parents are in the process of retiring now. They're stepping back each year more and more. And my brother and I have taken over as acting managers. And then my sister-in-law works full-time, and then my husband works part-time. And then the kids, I have a son, then I have a niece and nephew, and everyone's involved at this point.
Yeah, we've met your kids, I guess, and your nieces and nephews, because we've interacted with some of them and talked with them when we've been down there. So let's start with you have three locations, but let's start with the fruit orchard, because I think that's probably the thing that most people are familiar with in terms of, taking a trek to Wilcox and going to pick apples. So can you talk about that whole experience and what someone could, if they went down to Wilcox and went to your orchard, what kind of fruits they'd be picking and how they go about it, and just kind of describe for people who have never been there what going down to the fruit orchard is like.
Okay, yeah, absolutely. So our orchard has the fruit. A lot of people get confused where everything is. The produce and pumpkins has the vegetables. Our orchard location, the original one, has all the fruit trees. We have apples, peaches. We have beautiful crops this year. Last year, we got hit hard with frost and had nothing. So we're so excited to have such wonderful crops this year. So you come out, make the trip out. It's a really nice drive from the Tucson area out here. It's about an hour and 15, 20 minutes. You come out. We're open 7 days a week. You can bring your own containers to pick into, or we have boxes you can get here, and you get to go out in the orchard, and we give you directions where to go, what's ripe, and we let you go out there, and we encourage you to taste the fruit before you pick it. Make sure you like what you're picking, and you can pick as much or as little as you want, and you just pay for what you pick. There's no charge for parking or admission. Excuse me. We also have a bakery where we make pies from scratch. We do fudge. We have a whole gourmet food area.
And so you can make a day out of it. You can get there a little bit early when it's not too hot, go out and pick apples and whatever you're going to pick, and then come back and have some fudge and sit around. You have some nice picnic table areas, a little patio area where you can sit and have a drink and kind of reconnoiter with your friends and family. Pay for your produce, and then we'll talk about the other two locations in just a sec. So you have Peach Mania coming up in August. Tell us about those weekends and what's going to be happening with Peach Mania.
Right. So it's going to be going the next three weekends for the Peach Mania. Remember, you can go pick peaches every day, 7 days a week, but the Peach Mania is on the weekends. And what we add to the peach picking is we're going to start out the mornings, Saturdays and Sundays, with a peach pancake with homemade peach topping breakfast. That's from 8 to 10:30. We have apple smoked hamburger lunches from 11 to 2:30. We'll be making apple cider donuts and peach donuts fresh right off the fryer for you each day. There's kettle corn set up, so we have a few extra food options for you on the weekends.
Those burgers were made with the apple wood from the trees, right?
Right, smoked with those.
Mm-hmm. And it's just amazing, absolutely amazing. Yeah. That's happening. Like you said, you can pick peaches whenever they're in season, anytime. But this is just a special focus in August about hype up people's excitement about the peaches. And the peaches are delicious. They're absolutely delicious.
And we are in the great part of peach picking right now. I think we have 7 varieties open right now. They're getting really big, really sweet. It's fun to go out there and pick. Your box fills up really fast.
What do you do with the, obviously, fruit tree, some, as Newton said, some of the apples fall to the ground because of gravity or something. What do you do with all of the apples and peaches that fall to the ground? Can people come and get those for animals or anything? Or are those, what do you do with those?
We have certain ranchers that we are already working with that will come and pick up the fruit for their animals. We can't sell it because of food safety laws, but we do let a couple ranchers that are around here have set up with us to come pick those up.
So nothing goes to waste. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. And we try to have our crews go out and pick the ones that are really soft. They're going to be falling soon, so we can use those for pies and, actually use them instead of losing them.
Right. We typically pick too much. We just, you start picking, you start having fun picking the fruit, and then you end up, you've got this huge wheelbarrow full of apples or peaches, and then they last you for 6 weeks. It's amazing. But man, they go fast in my family. They're absolutely delicious. You have a chili roast coming up as well. What is that activity going to be?
Yeah, so that's going to start next weekend at our farm location, and they're going to be roasting chilies right there in front of you. There'll be samples of the different green chilies. There's hot, medium, and mild. It's just fresh picked right from picking them to right to the roaster. So they're super fresh. You can go out and pick your own chilies. We should have all the different peppers ready then. It's really fun. It smells really good when they're roasting those chilies.
Great. Well, we'll take a little break here, and when we come back, we'll talk about the other two locations that you have, which is the produce picking and where the chilies will be and so forth. And then we'll also talk about your little country store, which is not so little and is an awesome place. We're talking with Mandy Kirkendall. She's the owner of Apple Annie's. Her family has owned it since the 70s, and it's a great experience for families and company outings as well. So we'll come back after the break, and we'll learn some more about what Apple Annie's has down in Wilcox, Arizona. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI, 1030 AM, The Voice. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Ed Ackerley. We're speaking this morning with Mandy Kirkendall, who's one of the owners of the family that owns Apple Annie's Orchard and Country Store. And before we move on to the picking of produce, let's talk a little bit about the Apple Harvest Celebration, which is going to be over the Labor Day weekend and the following weekend. Talk a little bit about what's going to be happening on that weekend, those two weekends as well.
So that will be the peak of our apple picking. We'll be picking red and golden delicious. We should have Granny Smith by then. We'll have a lot of different apples for you to pick. And we'll be doing, like I was mentioning before, we're doing our peach pancake breakfast now. We'll be jumping over to our apple top pancake breakfast on Saturdays and Sundays. And it's just a lot of fun to get out there. It really feels like the beginning of fall there when you're getting into September.
What if you have somebody that would like to experience Apple Annie's but doesn't necessarily want to walk out into the orchard and actually pick an apple or pick a peach or pick something? They can still come and enjoy, right? There's things for them to do, and they can certainly sit there and enjoy the experience, right?
Absolutely. It's just peaceful out here. It's nice to sit just on the patio and enjoy it. It's cooler here than it is in Tucson. It's you're out in the country, and we do have fruit already picked. We have the peaches already picked now, and by then we'll have the apples already picked. So you can still come get the fresh fruit. And we will start this weekend. We'll have wagon rides out to the orchard to pick peaches, so you don't have to walk out there. Yeah. Those will be going on the weekends.
great. And it's good for little kids, but it's also good for anybody, any age, that could go out and reach up and pull an apple off of a tree. It's kind of an interesting experience. If you've never done it, it certainly is a unique experience. So you have another location, which is just a mile or so away, which is the produce, and where people can go and pick produce. And in late summer and early fall, what kind of produce is available for people to come in and pick? And then obviously in the under the Ramada, there's a whole bunch of produce that you can choose from that's already picked, but you can actually go pull up some potatoes and stuff like that. So tell us a little bit about what is available if you want to go to the produce picking area.
Sure, we have so many different vegetables. Right now we're doing summer squash, green beans, eggplants, green chilies. We'll be getting into tomatoes in the next week or so. We have already picked sweet corn, watermelons. So you can, again, go pick your own, or we have it already picked there. And as we go into the season more, we'll be getting into different types of peppers, the yellow bell peppers, red and green. We'll be getting into the red chilies. And then as we get into the fall, we'll transition into the winter vegetables, as we call them. So we'll get into the winter squash, the pumpkins, broccoli.
Right. So a person could, or a group of family members or whoever, could go down and they could go pick fruit at the orchard and have a piece of pie and enjoy the morning there. And then they could run over to the produce area, and it's a short little drive away, and then pick up some vegetables and experience that as well. Is there food available over at the produce side? Is there, like you have at the orchard, is there food and drinks and stuff available there as well?
So for right now, there's roasted corn. We're roasting sweet corn on the weekends. Then we get into our fall season, we do have food vendors there set up selling. The kettle corn will be over there, and different drinks, as well as a barbecue truck. But that's just for the fall season. But for right now, there's the roasted corn.
Right. So you get a piece of pie for breakfast over at the orchard, and you go over and get some corn for lunch. You talked a little bit about it. One of the fun things to do in Wilcox is to go down and pick your pumpkin from the pumpkin patch. Can you talk a little bit about those fall vegetables and what will be happening in the fall around Halloween and around Thanksgiving and so forth? People can come and pick pumpkins then as well, correct?
Yep, that will start September 21st. Our corn maze opens, and that's a kickoff to our fall pumpkin celebration. That will be open every day through October. On the weekends, you can jump on a hayride out to go pick a pumpkin. We'll have a sunflower field. People love going out there and taking pictures. You can also pick the sunflowers. And so that's all the way through October. Every day we're open, and the special things are on the weekends again there.
And the other thing that you guys do really well is, like, say, for instance, when you said sunflowers, that was a good example. Someone might go pick some sunflowers, but then what do I do with them? You will tell them how to prepare them and how they can be cooked, and here's what you do when you take them home. Here's what you're going to do with your sunflowers. And that's helpful for people who don't know. Maybe they're picking a vegetable that they haven't really worked with before, and they don't know really how to prepare it. You can help them with that, correct?
Yeah, we always have tips for you. We have papers to hand out with different recipes or freezing tips. People are, you know, to preserve your harvest.
So let's talk a little bit about the country store, which is just a fun place to go. If you didn't do anything else and you just stopped at the country store for a few minutes because you didn't have a lot of time as you're heading to El Paso or coming back into Tucson, it's a nice, it has pies and other things from the orchard. Tell us a little bit about the country store. What was the genesis of that, and how come a country store? It's closer to the freeway, correct?
And so. Right. So our orchard and farm are about 15 minutes off of I-10. Our country store is right off I-10, right off the exit there in Wilcox. And we've been wanting a year-round location for a long time, and we were just looking for the right spot, and this building became available, and it's very easy access to I-10. We are able to have be open year-round there, and we have our pies, our apple bread, all of our really popular items are there. We don't bring in any of our fruits and vegetables. We do want you to come straight out to the source for that. Right. But it's just a nice place to stop. Like you said, driving back and forth on I-10, or Thanksgiving comes up and you want our pies, you can make the quick trip down there and get your pies for Thanksgiving for the neighborhood.
Yeah. Talk a little bit about the pies. That's a huge thing that lots of people like you said, for Thanksgiving and special occasions, to get some pies. Do they order pies in advance from you? Obviously, there's pies available at the country store all the time, but or even at the orchard. But would it be best to order in advance, especially if you wanted several pies?
Yes. If you want specific pies and you know when you're coming, you can go on to appleannies.com and there's a pie order form. You just fill it out. That's for pickup at our country store. You don't pay till you actually pick them up, but we'll make sure to have them ready for you, fresh pies ready for you, specifically what you want. That's always a good idea if you want more than a couple pies, or especially like around the holidays, we do encourage orders because we sell out quickly.
So list off a couple of the flavors of the pies that you have. You have obviously apple and peach, but what are some of the different pies you have?
Yeah, we do the apple, apple crumb, apple raspberry, apple rhubarb, apple cherry. Then going over to peach, the peach, peach crumb, peach raspberry. We do a pumpkin pie in the fall. We do a pecan pie. Then we do have a juice sweetened variations with no sugar in the peach and the apple.
Sounds delicious. They sound great. Let's talk a little bit. As I said, my wife has taken groups down there. Many schools take groups down to do school trips, but it's also a good place to do a team building event for a company, for an organization. If you want to build some esprit de corps with an organization and you want your members to have something fun to do, it's a nice little day trip to do that. So could you explain how someone would go about scheduling a tour or just... They don't have to take a tour. They're just coming down and to participate in the existing activities. But you probably should know if you're going to bring a bus full of 100 people down, you should probably know about that. So how do they arrange that with you?
Yeah, so if you go onto our website, appleannies.com.
Cox Business is here to set you up with tech solutions.
12 or larger, if you're going to want to like maybe do the hayride together, you know, we can get families on there together, but if you come with a bigger group, we can't guarantee everyone's going to be on the same one. So we would encourage that. It's right. Great for businesses. We have a couple of businesses that come down and invite all their employees and they'll pay for maybe their pumpkins and their hayride, their lunch, and then give them options to do. And you go out on your own or meet with your company. So that's a great one. School groups, homeschool groups. We don't do organized field trips anymore, but we welcome the schools to come down and just let the kids get out there and see where their food comes from.
Right. And that's kind of, I know, at least in my wife taught first grade, and that was the purpose of it. It was to show them where an apple comes from, show them where a peach comes from, show them how to dig up a potato out of the ground, and this is what your French fries are made out of. And it's a great experience for young people that have never experienced that farming stuff before. You have an online store too, so the website, you can buy some things online as well. You don't do a lot of shipping per se, but what are some of the things that you can access through the website? Obviously, you're making reservations if you're bringing a group. You can order your pies. But that's your portal to kind of focus as to what's happening this weekend in Wilcox at Apple Annie's. Here's where you go.
Yeah, there's a lot of information on the website. For our online store, go on that and you can get some of our popular food items like our apple bread, our fudge, different jarred goods. We have a whole different, lots of salsas and preserves, apple butter. We can ship all that stuff out. We don't ship pies or fruit, but that other stuff you can get anytime year round. You're down here, find something you love, can't make it back again. We can always ship that to you.
Yeah, but it's worth the trip to go down there. So give a little bit of the directions on how to get down to Wilcox from Tucson. Just to explain, you said about an hour, 15 minutes, but if you could just explain how to get to your places, it would be great.
Sure. You just take I-10 east to Wilcox. It's exit 340. You're going to go north on Fort Grant Road. The orchard, you go 5.5 miles up and you'll see a big sign. You turn right there, or to go to the produce and pumpkins, you continue 6 miles from there to get to the other farm. And then for the country store, same directions. You turn off of I-10 and then you'll see our sign right there that says to turn right for our country store, and we're like 2 minutes off the freeway.
Well, you know, Jump in Tucson is about success and about celebrating the companies and organizations that have done a good job in Southern Arizona in the Tucson area, and I'm a fan of Apple Annie's. My family's a fan. You guys have done a great job out there. I know it's a lot of hard work being open 7 days a week, and things got to be watered and cleaned and weeded and grown and all those things. So it's a mammoth task you have there, but it's fun, isn't it?
It's so much fun. And it is a lot of work. We work really hard, but we want to do it. We love, like you're saying, bringing the kids out, making memories together. That's worth it for us. And it is a family business, and we've all worked really hard to get where we're at right now. And we love it.
What's the future look like for Apollani's, doing the three locations and the online? Anything else in the works that's coming up? Events all the time. We're always creating new events.
Yeah, we always try to change up our events, add new stuff when we can. Just keep improving on what we're doing. I don't know that we'll expand anymore, but just improving on what we have here and just making it a better experience.
Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning, Mandy Kirkendall and her family, the owners of Apollani's Country Store, Apollani's Orchard, and Apollani's Produce Farm down in Wilcox, Arizona, just a little bit of a drive southeast of Tucson on I-10, and you're there, and it's well worth going to, and delicious fruit and wonderful pies and all sorts of wonderful things. Thanks for joining us this morning, Mandy. We appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI 1030 AM, The Voice. We'll be back after the break with some more exciting things on Jump in Tucson. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I'm your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. This is the Friday version, the success story of organizations and businesses that are doing good work in Tucson. One of those that has been around for many years is Arizona Early Music. Their executive director is Dominic Giardino. That's a nice Italiano. Non posso parlare italiano molto bene. Good morning, Dominic. How are you?
Good morning, Ed. I'm doing great. Thank you so much for allowing me to jump in here and share a little bit about our mission and about some of the exciting events we have coming up.
Fantastic. Well, let's share a little bit of the history of Arizona Early Music and when it was formed in 1982 and why it was formed, and kind of give us a little background as to what Arizona Early Music is and what that whole history is over the last 40 plus years.
Yeah, absolutely. So in 1982, two professors from the University of Arizona and a group of music lovers in the community right here in Tucson decided that there was a little bit of a gap in Tucson's already rich cultural community in the area of early music, or sometimes what we refer to now as historically informed performance. And essentially what these folks did was they got together, they began to advocate for performing certain repertoires on period instruments using historically informed styles, and really from the beginning tapping into a community that was really enthusiastic not only about listening to music but also participating in music making. There's a really strong connection, for instance, between our concert series and organizations like the Tucson Recorder Society and the Viola da Gamba Society of Southern Arizona. So since 1982, the organization has actually been a presenter series that specializes in bringing in touring ensembles, both from around the country, but also around the world, who specialize in performing historical music on historical instruments in historically informed ways. And while that all sounds a little bit esoteric, I think, at first introduction, the whole premise of what we do and what the artists we bring in specialize in is this idea that, like language, music changes over time, right? Music hasn't always sounded one way, just like English hasn't always sounded one way. And so we're feeling very privileged to be in a place where, as of right now, we're the only series in Arizona that makes this particular type of music available to both Tucson audiences and folks who actually travel in from across the state to hear our offerings.
Great. And so the mission statement reads, dedicated to the enrichment of contemporary life with the music of the past. And so over the last 40 plus years, you've delivered on that with that mission of trying to create that ambiance and experience for people to enjoy the music of the past, but also within their current contemporary life and enriching their own personal lives.
Yeah, absolutely. The thing that's also really important about what we do is, well, there's a huge connection to the history itself and understanding these, like I said, musical languages of the past. We also acknowledge that nobody knows what the past really sounded like, right? Of course, until about the 1880s right. or 1890s, you didn't really even have records. So a huge part of what we do and what the artists that we present do is acknowledge that it's not about creating necessarily an ambiance that's stuck in the past, but realizing that historical languages can exist in the present and can create a sense of enrichment and understanding of music of the past, that it's not something that exists within a museum itself. And sorry, you'll hear a train there to create a little bit of extra historical ambiance.
But
that it's something that still lives with us, and the artists we present are living today, active today, working through the sometimes complicated artistic scene of today, and contributing something that is informed by the past, but determined to be for the present.
Great. We're talking with Dom Giardino, who is the executive director of Arizona Early Music. So you're a nonprofit organization, and can you tell us a little bit about your board of directors and who from the community helps lead your group?
Of course. Yeah. So from actually just about 1983 or 84, we've been incorporated as a charitable nonprofit in the state of Arizona. Our board is led by Scott Mason, who also, I mentioned two other organizations earlier, he also leads the Tucson Recorder Society and the Viola da Gamba Society of Southern Arizona. So he's Mr. Early Music Tucson. Our board has a broad spectrum of both professional background and amateur music making within its ranks. We have everybody from professional musicians who are attached to the University of Arizona to career engineers who have had lifelong passions for music making to folks who were just members of our audience who fell in love with what we do and wanted to be a part of the broader mission of bringing world-class performers to Tucson who can reach both our audience but also extend out to some of our educational missions throughout the state. So it's a diverse board of folks, both professionally and experientially, and it's a real privilege to be working with all of them.
As you look at your website, there are the listing of all of the concerts since 1982 and all of the seasons and the works that have been performed. Pretty amazing list of different repertoire and musical styles and artists who have come and participated. So could you highlight a couple of those maybe over the last couple of years or some of the ones that are pretty impressive in terms of what Arizona Early Music is presenting in their concerts?
Definitely. And actually it relates, the first thing that I'll bring up relates pretty heavily to the season we have coming up, because if there's one person who's been with us from the very beginning, it is Paul Udet, who, of course, is a Grammy Award-winning lutenist. He's the director of the Boston Early Music Festival and actually was one of my teachers in school. So I'm really excited to be welcoming him back to Tucson. He'll be actually presenting a concert this February in collaboration with the Tucson Guitar Society. So some information on that concert can be found online. But it's a very exciting performance that's going to feature some newly discovered or rediscovered works from Northern Italy from the 16th century, all solo lute music. Also, very early in our series, we had folks like Ton Koopman, who is the director of the Amsterdam Baroque Orchestra, another one of these leading, pioneering historical performance ensembles that has been active in Europe for many, many decades. And a few years ago, folks who have been with the series for a long time will remember that we were actually the last stop on the Alos Ensemble's final tour before they very deservedly retired after quite the tenure. We've had these relationships with a variety of older, more established ensembles, again, folks who have been decorated with Grammy Awards and other international accolades celebrating their music making. But another thing that we're really proud of is also ushering in the next generation of historical performance specialists and early music performers. And that really brings us, I think, to these events we have coming up in a few weeks with the new emerging ensemble residency.
Could you talk a little bit about the venues that you perform in or that you have these concerts? So Arizona Early Music, we're going to talk after the break about one coming up at San Javier Mission, but what are some of the venues that you've had over the last 40 years? Obviously, the University of Arizona has some great concert halls, but where have you performed? Where have these taken place?
So the series is actually founded out of St. Philip's in the Hills. And it is a venue that we still perform at with some frequency today. We're also, most of our concerts these days have been at Grace St. Paul's Episcopal Church. And over the last few years, we've started to branch out with some greater community in Southern Arizona partnerships that have brought our concerts to the Center for Performing, the Community Performing Arts Center, Green Valley.
Right.
We're going to be in Patagonia in just about a week and a half, I think, a week actually from Sunday. And as you mentioned, at San Javier. So we're branching out. We're thinking about other places to put this music. And maybe one of the things that hasn't been said about the music that we perform or that we present is the diversity of sound that we have over the course of one season. It's quite the feat when you look at a season like ours. We're not just presenting, say, string quartets or piano quintets. We have everything from Renaissance choirs to wind bands to string orchestras. And so we try to think really thoughtfully about what types of venues fit those performing ensembles best. And particularly with the group that we have coming up, we're very excited to be matching an ensemble that specializes in early 17th century music with an 18th century Spanish mission, sort of the perfect venue for the ensemble.
It is interesting that your note that it is hard to know what music sounded like. We don't have recordings of music except for maybe over the last 100 years or so. And so we think we know what it sounds like, but because obviously it's written down and someone can perform it. But it's interesting how you're trying to recreate the sound of how it might have sounded a couple hundred years ago and bringing that to the fore. When we come back after the break, we'll continue talking with Dom Giardino about Arizona early music. We've got a concert coming up at Sanavir Mission. We'll talk a little bit about that, and we'll talk about this emerging ensemble residency. You're listening to Jump in Tucson on KVOI. We'll be back after a word from some great sponsors. Welcome back to Jump in Tucson. I am your host, Dr. Ed Ackerley. With us is Dom Giardino, who is the executive director of the Arizona Early Music Performing Group, who does for 42 years now, has been performing music from 1700s, 1600s, and whatever that early music is over 42 years. Dom, let's talk a little bit before we move on to the concert coming up in about 10 days. Let's talk a little bit about the Emerging Ensemble Residency. That's an important project that you all are working on. Tell us a little bit about that and the inspiration behind that, and then we'll be seeing that a little bit of that coming up in August.
Thanks, Ed. Yeah, the Emerging Ensemble Residency is a brand new program that we're launching this season. Again, Arizona Early Music has been for the last 42, we're entering our 43rd season now, for the past 42 years, presenting touring ensembles, both from the national scene and international scene. And one of the things that we're, of course, becoming increasingly interested in is fostering the next generation of touring ensembles. I think anybody who's sort of plugged into the touring art scene, particularly the touring classical music scene, knows that it can be a challenging environment. And we wanted to offer an avenue of support for young artists who are looking to really put themselves out there and have the opportunity to both be in residence and perform in a variety of venues over the course of about a week and a half. So this year, as I said, we're launching this new program. We're bringing in the Montreal-based ensemble, Le Concert Laurentien, which is a quartet featuring a violinist, a cornetto player, which, if you don't know a cornetto, it's basically like, it looks a lot like a recorder, that instrument that everybody starts in fourth grade, but it sort of creates its sound with a brass mouthpiece. And then there's a trombone player or sax player and an organist. And this ensemble specializes in music of the early 17th century, late 16th century. Over the course of 9 days, this ensemble will be living in Tucson. We'll have concerts in Patagonia. We'll have concerts at San Javier, and then right in Tucson at Catalina United Methodist Church. So we have three opportunities to hear these fabulous players. And excitingly, all of these concerts are going to be free and open to the public. So there's no tickets required. We encourage as many people to join us as possible and really support these folks as they develop a great program that hopefully they can bring on the road to organizations like AEM in the future.
Great. The one concert that I'd like to focus on is the concert that's coming up at San Javier Mission, which is in concert, no pun intended, with the Kino Heritage Society. Father Eusebio Francisco Kino was a priest who many people in Tucson and southern Arizona know was here in the late 1600s and early 1700s, and he was one of the people that helped lay the foundation for the mission, and so his birthday is coming up on August 10th, and so you are working with the Kino Heritage Society, and Arizona Early Music will present this concert at San Javier Mission, and so this is going to be on Wednesday, August 14th, I guess, is that when that is? Yeah. So tell us
Absolutely.
A little bit about that concert and the venue that you'll be playing in.
So we were very excited when Rosie Garcia, the president of the Kino Heritage Society, reached out to us with this opportunity to collaborate at San Javier. We'd been looking for an opportunity to, of course, bring some of this historic music into such a beautiful, brilliant, impactful, and meaningful historic location in Tucson for a long time. And it just so happened to be that Father Kino's birthday celebration was going to be during the same period as the Emerging Ensemble residency. And as we explored it more, it felt that what better way to celebrate Father Kino's birthday than to actually present one music that he may have known on instruments that he certainly did know in his lifetime, these instrument technologies that we're talking about, right in the sanctuary of the mission. So we will have Le Concert Laurentien performing in the sanctuary. The concert's at 3 p.m. on Wednesday, August 14th. And we don't have a specific program nailed down for this particular event just yet, because as I mentioned with the Emerging Ensemble residency, the idea here is to let these folks really cultivate and develop program as they go. So what I can promise attendees who come to this concert is really truly fine, beautiful early 17th century or late 16th century music in a sanctuary space that is built for this technology. One of the things that we frequently say in classical music and specifically in early music is this space is just as much an instrument as those things the musicians are holding at the front of the stage or in the front of the sanctuary in this case. So we're all very excited to really hear history ring today at San Javier Mission.
Well, we encourage everyone to go out and participate in all the concerts with the August concerts that are available. They're all free and open to the public. We're speaking with Dom Giardino, who is with Arizona Early Music. Dom, if someone wanted to support your organization and help you, where could they go to help your 501c3?
The easiest place to get a hold of us is right on our website. We do have a contact us page where you can actually reach out to me directly by phone or send me an email. We also have all different ways of donating to our mission, which can include donating to our season, but also donating specifically to the Emerging Ensemble Residency. The Emerging Ensemble Residency is, again, something we feel really strongly about in supporting this next generation of players. And it's something that we'd like to sustain for as many years as humanly possible. So if you are interested in supporting the residency program or any other part of our season, please feel free to reach out to me. Again, my email can be found on the website along with our phone number.
Great. So we've been talking with Dom Giardino. He is the executive director of Arizona Early Music. There is a great concert available coming up on Wednesday, August 14th at 3 o'clock at San Javier Mission del Bac, which is celebrating not only this beautiful music from the 16th and 17th centuries, but also celebrating the Kino Heritage Society, the birthday of Father Kino, who was well known in these parts. His birthday is on August 10th, and so on August 14th there'll be this concert. They'll be part of that. So ArizonaEarlyMusic.org, is that the website?
azearlymusic.org.
azearlymusic.org. And that's where people can go and get the information, find out what more there is to do. Well, Dom, we thank you for your leadership. It's great that you are back leading the organization, and one of your teachers is actually somebody that is part of the organization. So it's ironic that you would have this opportunity. So, and you probably are a performer in your own right, correct?
I perform on all types of historical clarinets. So clarinets from the late 17th century through about 1900.
That's great. Well, a great organization to be involved in, and I'm sure that some of our listeners will join you at the concerts coming up here in August. So thank you for joining us this morning. Coming up on Monday is our Arizona Wonder Show, and Tuesday, Ted Maxwell host. On Wednesday, Grant Kruger will be here, and on Thursday, Tom Moulton will be back on Friday. If you'd like to be interviewed on Jump in Tucson and share your success story, go to jumpintucson.com and let us know a little bit about you, and who knows, maybe you'll be interviewed live on the air. Jump in Tucson broadcasts from Bustos Media Studios and KVOI 1030 AM Radio. Thank you for listening, and we hope that you enjoyed Jump in Tucson, and that you will jump in Tucson.